Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Everyone, just when you think we went away, we're back. At least for Hanukkah. Yes, folks, the lights were not the only miracle. The management of WEDO is sponsoring this program, along with Dr. James Weiner of Your Health Naturally fame. Welcome, everyone. I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host. For the next hour, sit back and enjoy a taste of the Geula, the final redemption, where we will dedicate the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, the third and final temple. It's going to be an area of true peace where the only occupation is going to be to serve God on levels we can only dream about. Well, let me tease you a bit. First, I'll give a short history of the holiday of Hanukkah, and then Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, a resident rabbi, will set the stage with a lesson from Torah. Shmuel Sackett, the international director of Manikat Yehudit, will be with us with some exciting news from Israel on how the final redemption will take place from a political perspective. Then, the world-renowned speaker and author, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson, will give us a spiritual update on the Geula. And if that's not enough, Devorah DeLynn is back with her deeply insightful feminine perspective. Hey, did you know that after Mashiach, the Messiah, comes, the aspect of nurturing and understanding that comes from the woman will be the dominant force? Finally, a resident rabbi wraps things up with another famous story, and all this while we entertain you with lively traditional Hanukkah songs you can sing with the whole family. So don't move that dial. We'll be right back after this message from Dr. James Weiner.
Hello, this is Dr. James Weiner, director of the Weiner Wellness Center Greentree, inviting you to get well naturally. If conventional drugs and surgery have not eliminated your health complaints, it's time to try safe, natural approaches such as nutrition, muscle therapy, and chiropractic. We've helped tens of thousands regain their health, overcoming irritable bowel, colitis, Crohn's disease, acid reflux, carpal tunnel, chronic fatigue, psoriasis, mood swings, arthritis, headaches, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, underactive and overactive thyroid, and many other conditions. Take advantage of my 41 years of experience and my team of highly effective health professionals to help you to achieve better quality of health. Call us at the Weiner Wellness Center in Greentree, just minutes from downtown Pittsburgh, just off the parkway, at 412-922-WELL. 412-922-WELL. 412-922-9355 to get well naturally with the dedicated staff of the Weiner Wellness Center.
And now for the Jewish history moment, the significance of Hanukkah. A holiday occurs each year during this time called Hanukkah, observed by Jews all over the world. Many Christians and even some Jews mistakenly believe Hanukkah is the Jewish Christmas, since gifts are exchanged and lights are lit. Actually, except for the two holidays occurring about the same time, they have no relationship. Hanukkah represents a religious miracle that's culminated in a military victory and a rededication to Jewish religious practices. It's a reminder of how a small band of countrymen, the Maccabees, can protect their freedom against insurmountable odds. It also reminds us that we have a responsibility to act first before we can expect any help from above. The Greek king Antiochus Epiphanes became king in 175 BCE. At the same time, in Jerusalem, there was a small movement to become assimilated with the pagan cultures surrounding Israel. Jews who joined this movement were called Hellenists. Antiochus quickly agreed to support and encourage this new movement. With his authority growing throughout the Middle East, Antiochus decided to conquer Egypt and its king, Ptolemy. Freshman's victory in Egypt, he next turned his attention to Israel and the temple in Jerusalem with its rich storehouse of treasures donated by the people over many years. He desecrated the holy places and plundered the temple. 2 years later, Antiochus returned to Jerusalem allegedly as a friend. The Book of the Maccabees relates, he came to Jerusalem with an impressive force, addressing them with what appeared to be peaceful words. He gained their confidence. Then suddenly he fell the city, dealing it a terrible blow and destroying many of the people of Israel. He pillaged the city and set it on fire, tore down its houses and encircling wall, took the women and children captive and commandeered the cattle. They installed an army of sinful people, renegades, who fortified themselves inside it, storing arms and provisions and depositing there the loot that they had collected from Jerusalem. Antiochus continued the growth of his government, issuing proclamations that everyone was to abandon his own ways and conform to the king's decrees. There were book burnings and desecrations of holy places. Whenever someone was caught observing his own faith, he was put to death. And the Book of the Maccabees describes the barbarism that took place. Women who had their children circumcised were put to death according to the edict, with their babies hung around their necks. And the members of their household and those who had performed the circumcision were executed with them. The evil of Antiochus' tyranny did not go unopposed, however. Mattathias, the high priest in the town of Modiin, led a resistance that stood against overwhelming odds. The king's commissioners came to Mattathias and asked him, as the community leader, to be the first to step forward and conform to the king's decrees. Mattathias was offered gold and silver and many presents. His answer to the king was to kill the commissioners and flee to the hills with any who would remain faithful to God and his law. Mattathias became very strong and popular. He attracted a group called the Hasmoneans to assist him. He traveled with his group trying to persuade his countrymen to resist the evil and overthrow the king's rule. After Mattathias' death, his son Judah took command of the freedom fighters. He was a skillful leader, and with the help of heaven, his small band of followers slowly began to win. Not just physical battles, but also battles for the spirit of the Jewish people. Now that the people had hope, there was no stopping them. After Judah's freedom fighters routed the enemy, their first task was to rededicate the sanctuary in Jerusalem. It was in total ruins. The altar desecrated, the gates burned down, and vegetation growing in the courts, as it might in a wood or some mountain, while the storerooms were in ruins. After they thoroughly removed the pagan influences from the sanctuary, they rededicated the temple. One of the first tasks was to light the temple menorah. There was only one flask of consecrated oil that was permitted to be burned in the menorah. Each flask contained enough oil to last for one day. Miraculously, the oil lasted for 8 days, allowing them to obtain more consecrated oil without any interruption in the light of the menorah. The holiday of Hanukkah is celebrated by Jews who each light their own menorah as a symbol of the temple menorah. One candle is added each night to increase the light until the 8th night, when all 8 candles burn. The menorah is always placed at the entrance to the home or near a window where all can see. It is a symbol of freedom from religious persecution for all nations and should be enjoyed by all. Traditionally, Hanukkah is celebrated by giving children gelt or coins, one each night to teach of the miracle that occurred. And the dreidel, a top, is spun to remind us of how Jews would teach the children the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. During the time of the Greek rule, the Jews were forbidden to study the Bible, so they continued teaching their children through games. To this approach, if a Greek soldier came by, he would detect only the game and not the forbidden teachings. Ecclesiastes said, "There's nothing new under the sun." Let us learn the lessons of the Maccabees and understand that to overcome evil in our time only requires desire and action of a small group of dedicated patriots, patriots who understand that they must take that first step before relying on the help of heaven. And now it's time, and I know you've missed them. It's been a while, but now it's time for our resident rabbi to explain to you just how great the miracle of Hanukkah is. Ladies and gentlemen, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
Certain facts are taken for granted. At times, however, a little thought raises real questions regarding the logic behind these concepts, which are simply accepted at face value. For example, Hanukkah is 8 days long because the oil, which would normally have fueled the menorah for only one day, miraculously lasted for eight. Everyone knows this since their days in Hebrew school. But does this make sense? If there was sufficient oil to burn for one day, then the miracle lasted only 7 days. Why celebrate the first day if nothing miraculous occurred then? This question has long bothered Jewish scholars, and many, many answers have been suggested. Most of these answers demonstrate how there was indeed some sort of miracle on the first day of Hanukkah, too. For example, one of the answers is that the first day of Hanukkah commemorates the victory of the battle, the victory of the mighty that fell in the hand of the few. An interesting episode recounted in the Talmud will illuminate the matter. The Mishnaic sage, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, was a renowned miracle worker. Shortly after sunset, one Friday evening, he noticed his daughter sobbing. Upon asking her the reason for her distress, she explained that she had mistakenly lit the Shabbos candles with vinegar instead of oil. Rabbi Hanina comforted his daughter. "Do not be troubled, my dear. The one who commanded oil to burn will command vinegar to burn." Needless to say, the candles did not go out. In fact, they burned until the following night, when the Havdalah candle, the candle which accompanies the Saturday night ceremony, signaling the end of the Shabbos, was kindled from their flames. In the eyes of this holy sage, vinegar burning was no more spectacular than oil burning. This story is so striking and unique because Rabbi Hanina did not respond by saying, "Want to see something amazing? Watch this miracle." Rather, in the eyes of this holy sage, vinegar burning was no more spectacular than oil burning. The only difference between the two was how frequently they occur. If the definition of a miracle is godly intervention in personal or national affairs, then every phenomenon is miraculous, for everything that occurs is a direct result of God's command. The guardian of Israel never slumbers nor sleeps, but his watchful eye can and usually does express itself in natural means. Nature is merely the curtain which conceals the grand puppeteer from our sight. Nevertheless, we treasure miracles, and holidays are instituted to commemorate the more consequential ones. We cherish those precious moments in history when God chose supernatural means to come to our rescue, when the curtain was ripped away, leaving the puppeteer exposed. Rabbi Hanina had the ability to see through the curtain every day, but we don't. To us, vinegar burning is a remarkable sight to behold. Once the curtain had been temporarily lifted, the recognition that there is a puppeteer doesn't fade even after the curtain is restored. After witnessing vinegar burning, we realize that oil's ability to burn is also a result of God's command. The seven miraculous days when the menorah remained lit brings us to understand that the first day was no less miraculous.
And today we're privileged to have with us Shmuel Sackett, the International Director for Manhikut Yehudit, the Jewish Leadership Movement in Israel. Welcome, Shmuel.
Thank you very much, Hirsch. Always a pleasure to be with you.
You know, Shmuel, we're standing in the days of the final redemption. So from a political standpoint, what is Manhikut Yehudit, the Jewish Leadership Movement, and what are they trying to bring to Israel that's going to get us ready for the final redemption?
Look, Hirsch, we at Manhikut Yehudit take the final redemption seriously. We take our davening seriously. We take the promises that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made to us very seriously. And we take the state of Israel very seriously. And we look at it not as Israel being 60-plus years old, but rather a few thousand years old, and that what happened in 1948 was merely that Hashem returned us to the land that was given to us thousands of years ago, in the days, of course, of Yehoshua ben Nun and all the wonderful stories that we read and learn about in the Navi. So when we came back to the land 60-plus years ago, it wasn't just to establish, as we call it, a Hebrew-speaking Singapore. It was a lot more than that. It was really the beginning of the end, or the beginning of the beginning. And that is, it was something special. It was the fulfillment of prophecy. It was a tremendous, tremendous thing that we paid in blood. We paid in a lot of Jewish blood and continue to do so to this very day. So we look at that as a tremendous opportunity for us, a gift given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we have to do the right thing, and that is to set up a Jewish state, to set up a state based on Jewish values, where every single child knows the Shema, knows the davening, knows the laws, not through coercion or being forced or arm-twisted into anything, but through love and through tolerance, exactly what we do as an outreach program to teach every single Yid about his and her religion on a national level. The government doing this, the educational ministry, everything working its way down to the heart and soul of every Jew. This is what Jewish leadership is all about, and this is what we believe the state of Israel is all about. It has to be led by an authentic Jewish leader who clings to his Father in heaven, who has emunah shleima, who has complete belief and leads the Jewish people through love and through and with a smile on his face to really understand his and her special place in the world.
So great. So Manhikut Yehudit has been going on now for how many years?
Manhikut Yehudit actually was started about 12, 13 years ago, and it's a very, very successful movement. We're on the educational side, we have a political side, and we're really trying to use all the vessels given to us at our disposal through every single avenue possible to really make this point well-known and well-established.
So having visited Israel and speaking to many people, it seems as if you've got a big job ahead of you. How is the public accepting Manhikut Yehudit, and how realistic is it that this movement will be able to, through, I guess, the Likud leadership party, to actually be able to get to the point where it is the leadership of Israel?
In terms of realism, my philosophy is quite simple. The actual work, the actual, what we say, hishtadlus, the actual effort is in the hands of man. Success is in the hands of God. We have to do the right thing, Hirsch, and that is making sure that we understand that God didn't return us to the land after 2,000 years just to have a couple of, you know, Israelis, you know, swimming in some Olympic event or, I don't know what, making some computer chips so we could all use it in our cell phones. That's all fine and good, and I have nothing against that, but that's not the main reason. That's not what we paid in, with blood with over 23,000 holy soldiers and so on. We're here for a reason. It's going to take a long time, you know, with the natural course of things. We have to educate. We have to really let the Jews know exactly what's happening. But, you know, Hirsch, these are the days where we're reading about Yosef HaTzadik. Here's a guy who was sitting in jail for so many years, jail, in the dungeons of Egypt with rats and body lice and, I don't know, the horrific conditions. And one day there's a knock on the door and says, are you Joseph, the son of Jacob? Yeah, well, take a shave and change your clothes, and you're number two in charge of the entire world. So when Hashem decides that it's the time, it's the time. You have to be there. You have to be in the game. You have to make sure you understand your special place in the world. You have to have a smile on your face. Set a true example, a self-example about what a political leader is, what a Jewish leader is, and God willing, we'll be successful.
Well, I, of course, we agree with everything on that, but then we have a current prime minister who wants Israel to become part of the family of nations. In fact, he even wrote a book talking about that. With the current prime minister leading Israel in that direction, how do you fight back?
It's a battle on every level. It's a battle on the political level. It's a battle within in the Likud party that we're in. We're not short on, I won't say enemies, but we're not short on the different struggles that we have and the obstacles that we have to overcome. And these are challenges that Hashem has sent our way. And we just have to overcome them. We have to really continue to educate. We definitely have our work cut out for us. But you show me where it says that it's easy to be a Jew, and I'll take my hat off to you.
Okay, well, the government of Israel is, of course, a situation where we've seen laws made up on the flies. They don't have the checks and balances of the U.S. system. I mean, how can your movement get the system, so to say, on your side? In other words, if Moshe Feiglin, who is the leader of your movement and is candidate currently for prime minister, how is, if he even gets close to it, do you see that the system itself will do something to change that outcome?
This is a grassroots movement. And when enough people want it, it will happen. We've seen unbelievable changes in the last few years happen in crazy places in the world, in real totalitarian regimes. We've seen them fall. We've seen major changes take place because the people said, Dayenu, enough is enough. And that's what we have to do. Of course, we're not talking about a military struggle, God forbid. We don't want a civil war, heaven forbid. We're talking about convincing the people through just logic and beauty and the sweetness of our Torah values and so on. And Moshe Feiglin, as you mentioned, who is our candidate, is speaking across the country and really educating the Jews here as to what lies at the root of the problem. As I said, we have a lot of challenges, but when the people will get behind us, the last election that Moshe ran, he received 24% of the vote, which is one out of every four people in Israel's leadership party voted for him. They played their games, and they will continue to play the games. I'm talking about their leadership, and they will change the rules, and they will do everything they can. They'll do their job. We have to do our job, and our job is to take that 24% and turn it into 94%, and then they won't be able to do anything because the people will say, Dayenu, the people will say, we want a Jewish state, and believe me, when enough people say it, it will happen.
Okay, so in the minute we have left, it's important to visualize what your administration is going to look like. In the final minute, give us an idea of the step-by-step, how Menachem Yehudit is going to govern and how it's going to hopefully help to usher in the Geula Shlema.
Basically, we're talking about the political path that we have chosen is through Likud, which is Israel's leadership party. We're attempting through Moshe Feiglin to rise to the leadership of the Likud party. And as a matter of fact, there are elections coming very soon, January 31st. for the leadership of Likud. God willing, Moshe will win that election, and he will be the leader of the Likud party. Very soon after that, because Likud is the leadership party, Israel is a party-based system, he will be the prime minister of Israel. And as prime minister of Israel, he will set up the education ministry and the economic ministry and the defense ministry, all based on Jewish values, on the core values that and concepts that have been guiding our Jewish people for the last few thousand years. When this happens, when this is how the Jewish people are being led, then I guarantee you, this is what the nation of Israel wants. They have the neshama for it. The soul is on fire. Nothing will bring the Geula closer than a Jewish state leading towards its Father in heaven based on these Jewish values and concepts we hold so dear.
Beautiful. You know, it's the time of Hanukkah, and it's the time of Nes Gadol. So this should be a big Nes. We thank you for your time. We at the Jewish Experience wish you much hatzlacha, and it should be a Nes Gadol, and we should all usher in the Geula Shlema together.
But it's Nes Gadol Hayapo. That's the original dreidel in Israel.
That's
the
right.
Great miracle happened here, and that's what we're trying to do. Thank you, Hirsch, for the wonderful work you and your staff does for the Jewish people. Chanukah Sameach to everybody.
Thank you again, Shmuel. Freilich and Chanukah, Chanukah Sameach. Take care. Our privilege to welcome Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson, who's a noted speaker and educator on the staff of the Yeshiva.net and the Allgemeiner Journal. Yosef, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, Yosef, you know, this program we're doing today is concentrating on the Geula Shlema, the final redemption. And many people always, you know, we talk about it and everybody talks about it. In 2012, the world's going to end. How close are we really to the final redemption?
This question has to be answered by God Almighty, and I'm very flattered that you you present such a question to me. It reminds me of the anecdote of this guy who had his daughter dating somebody for a long time, and then she told her father, they want to get engaged. So the father asked to see him and interview him and have a schmooze with him. And the father, the future father-in-law, spoke to him for a few hours, and when he finished, comes to his wife, the future mother-in-law, and he says, I have very bad news, and I have very good news about this guy. What's the good news? What's the bad news? His wife says. I was talking to him, and I asked him, how are you going to support yourself? And he said, God will provide. And I said, for real, how are you going to support yourself? And he said, God will provide. So he says, the bad news is the guy doesn't have a job. The good news is he thinks I'm God. So the bottom line is the question of when exactly Mashiach, the Messiah, is going to come and bring redemption, this is something that Jews always knew. Only the creator of the world has the answer to that, which means even when great sages and rabbis and scholars and mystics have said that a certain time is very conducive for redemption, and a certain time is a time of redemption, and so forth, they were always extremely careful and hesitant to clarify that the exact timing and the exact date, the exact decision of when the redemption is going to unfold practically and pragmatically in the way that Judaism understands what the real redemption is in a very practical way, that is up to God. What we do know is that in our generation, we can hear the footsteps of redemption. In our generation, We have many aspects that are a foretaste of redemption. In our generation, we have to prepare ourselves for the redemption.
Okay. However, the Lubavitcher Rebbe said that this is the generation that will get up to greet Mashiach. Yet it's over 20 years since he said that. Many in this generation have already passed on. What did he mean?
This is a very important question, a very fundamental question. But again, to give an exact date of what the Rebbe meant, you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe himself said many times, it's completely incomprehensible why the redemption has not come. Because the time of the redemption has arrived. It's already past due. It's overdue. He said it's really very difficult to understand why the redemption didn't come. And he once expressed himself, I heard him say, that even according to the logic of Torah, in other words, divine logic, it would seem that the time is already ripe and Mashiach should have come. And I'll give an example that I think might clarify the issue. You know, if the Kabbalah compares exile to pregnancy and redemption to birth, during pregnancy, the child, the fetus, is in the womb of its mother. It's not fully actualized. It's in a state of potentiality. It's confined, as it were. It's somewhat incarcerated in the womb of its mother. It doesn't have independence. And then birth is a form of redemption. And the Kabbalah describes Mashiach's coming as the birth of the world, the birth of the Jewish people, and so forth. Now, there's what we call pregnancy, what we call due date. You know, it's when the doctors speculate that this is the time when the woman is due. Does she give birth on that day? Sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little later. Then there's what we call overdue. Overdue means that any day now it's going to happen, and for a husband to travel during that time is insensitive because it would not be a surprise if she gives birth at any moment. When one day goes by, 1 week goes by, another week goes by, and she's overdue, it's surprising actually that she did not give birth yet. It becomes a surprise. Where after 8.5 months, it's not a surprise, we're waiting. But when it's overdue, now it's natural that it should be any moment. And when it's not any moment, then another week and another week and another week go by, it becomes very surprising. It becomes difficult to understand. This is, I think, an appropriate metaphor to the Rebbe's message. There were times when the pregnancy was not complete. In other words, the time was not right here. The time was not due. Then there comes a time when it's due. It's due. This is the right time. Then there comes a point where it's overdue. And overdue means it's strange that it didn't happen yet. And therefore, it can happen mamash, as we say, any moment. And when it doesn't happen, we're surprised. Wow, another day went by and it didn't happen. But she's overdue for such a long time.
Yeah.
And yet, ultimately, the one who decides when the woman is going to give birth, exactly when, that only God decides. So the Rebbe said this is the generation, and was extremely, extremely saddened and perturbed and deeply, deeply aggrieved by the fact that after everything, even the time that's overdue, after everything the Jewish people have been through, he said it's mamash overdue, and still Mashiach didn't come. He said it mamash doesn't make sense. It should have been here yesterday. And the fact that it's not here today is surprising. Always understood that, and always emphasized, that ultimate decision, exactly when, is God's decision.
Well, how did the Rebbe view the modern state of Israel? I mean, Jews returning to the Holy Land, forming their own country, is that one of the simon, one of the signs of the Geula?
No. This was an issue that was heavily debated in the early years of the state. Some felt that this was a part of the process of the Messianic redemption. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, based on the famous law of the Rambam, in the laws of Kings chapter 11, the end of chapter 11, explained that this was not the case. As the Rambam explains there, that the process of the gathering of the exiles happens after after the building of the Beis Hamikdash through Mashiach. The modern state of Israel was an ungathering of many Jews from many different countries, but not through Mashiach and not after the building of the Beis Hamikdash. So the Rebbe viewed, you know, the ungathering of many Jews to the land of Israel as a great historic event, as a reality that contained within itself tremendous blessings, tremendous potentials, tremendous miracles, but not part of the actual messianic process. And in fact, emphasized many times that coupled with the many blessings that the modern state of Israel introduced into Jewish life, it also comes with many responsibilities and many challenges due to the fact that many of the leaders who were responsible for the creation of the Jewish state also felt very strongly that the Jewish people living in the land of Israel do not need any more Judaism. They don't need the Torah. They don't need the mitzvahs.
Yeah.
The Jewish children don't have to be educated in the spirit of Judaism. So the Rebbe pointed out that the state of Israel, with all of its blessings and miracles and the great privilege of having it and being there, also came with tremendous, tremendous challenges.
Okay, very good. And we have a short time left. Just a little bit of inspiration here, if you could. We always talk about what we can do to help bring the Geula Shlema, but, you know, day after day, it seems like it's still waiting, and we always waiting. But what can we do? What can a Jew do? What can a non-Jew do? What can we do? We've got about a minute left to help Hashem make that decision to bring the final redemption.
When Mashiach comes, when the Messiah comes, our egos will become complete conduits of God's energy. So the preparation for Mashiach is not just to do one more little thing or even one more big thing, but the preparation is to try to focus on transformation. That every person should look at themselves in the mirror and say, I want to stop living an ego-centered life and start living a God-centered life. And as a result, so many of our actions will be different. That's the greatest preparation for Mashiach. If we can not just do good things, but actually try to transform our very identity in a very real place, in a very sober and mature place, where we become God-conscious instead of ego-conscious, so that we become conduits constantly of love, of light, of holiness, of goodness. That's, I believe, a great, great preparation to channel and help bring down into the world the energy of the Mashiach, of the redemption.
Thanks. That's a great, inspiring way to wrap this up. And just want to thank you for being with us today. It's Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson of the Yeshiva.net and the Algemeiner Journal. And Rabbi, I just want to wish you a very freilichen, very lichtigen, and Simcha Dicha Chanukah.
Thank you so much, and same to you. Thank you for having me.
And now it's time for my extremely talented and very articulate daughter, Miss Devorah DeLynn, with a feminine perspective.
You have to realize that someone is pulling the strings around here. When I get to come back to the radio to do a segment about Hanukkah, after just finishing a course on ancient Greek philosophy. Not the best subject for a nice Jewish girl, but hey, it was required. Anyway, nothing we learn is ever wasted, and as I sat through the hours of lecture, one quote in particular stuck out at me. We were discussing Plato's Republic, where one of the men, Thrasymachus, famously declares that justice is the advantage of the stronger. Since everyone is required to do as a dictator declares, justice, as he defines it as something that benefits the majority, will always be dictated by the person in charge, the stronger man. But the Al-Hanisim that we say on Hanukkah has a ready answer, Giborim biyad chalashim, that the strong will be delivered into the hands of the weak. If only Thrasymachus could have waited a few hundred years to see his error. So Hanukkah today has become a popular holiday of gift-giving, lights, and historical reflection. But as you sit by the Hanukkah lights, pause a minute to think about the future. Hanukkah is not just about an ancient story. There are so many lessons that follow us into our daily lives, and even beyond, into the days of Mashiach. Let's first take a look into the actual letters of the name Hanukkah. The first letter, the Ches, has the numerical value of 8, which, coincidentally, is the number of days we observe the holiday. Interestingly, the letter Ches is actually comprised of 2 letters, a Zion and a Vav. Rabbi Aaron Raskin explains that the Vav represents men, or the male aspect of a relationship. The shape of the Vav is that of a long line and is written from top to bottom. It symbolizes the drawing down, or provider, of knowledge and sustenance. The Zion, on the other hand, represents the female. The word Zayanin means crowns and refers to the calligraphic crowns that grace certain letters in the Torah. Naturally, the woman is the crown of her home and graces her husband with the application of his sustenance. In order to create the letter Ches, the scribe must write the Vav and the Zion, and then a Chatoteres, a bridge, that unites the two and ultimately creates the shape of a chuppah, or marriage canopy. The word chuppah can be divided into ches po, or the notion of ches is here. What is the notion of ches? What is the idea of the letter ches? The letter ches, in essence, symbolizes the ideal relationship, one where each partner fulfills their role to the best of their intrinsic ability and is lovingly united through God's sanctification. In the book of Yirmiyahu, the prophet talks about the times of Mashiach as times where nekeva tesovev gaver, that the female aspects of kindness and mercy will overrule the current aspects of discipline and male. As the Ches in the Hanukkah story teaches us, each person, at different times in their life, must fulfill certain roles. Sometimes, a person needs to be merciful and willing to turn the other cheek in favor of pursuing peace, as was the initial thought during the Greek occupation. Other times, a person needs to act the strong leader and may even need to be harsh and unbending in order to see that God's will is carried out, as the Maccabees later realized. The story of Hanukkah inherently shows us that transformation is possible. It may come from a small band of determined leaders, or it may just come from within, but you can be sure that with God's help, positive change can occur. The times of Mashiach, when our current perception of the world will be reversed, can only come about through a concentrated drive towards positive self-change, and through that, a transformation of the world as a whole. Have a Freilich and Hanukkah.
Thank you.
Hanukkah special would not be complete without another famous story from our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
One of the legendary soldiers in the Lubavitcher Rebbe's army of teachers and activists who kept Judaism alive in communist Russia in the darkest years of repression was Rabbi Osher Susankin, who spent many years in Soviet labor camps for his, quote, counter-revolutionary activities. In one of these camps, he made the acquaintance of a Jew by the name of Nachman Roseman. In his youth, Nachman had abandoned the traditional Jewish life in which he was raised to join the Communist Party. He served in the Red Army, where he rose to a high rank. But then he was arrested for engaging in some illegal business and sentenced to a long term of hard labor in Siberia. Roseman was drawn to the Chassid, who awakened in him memories of the home and life he had forsaken. With Reb Osher's aid and encouragement, he began to return to Jewish observance under conditions where keeping kosher, avoiding work on Shabbos, or grabbing a few moments for prayer meant subjecting oneself to near starvation, repeated penalties, and a daily jeopardy of life and limb. One winter, as Hanukkah approached, Reb Osher revealed his plan to his friend. "I'll get a hold of a small empty food can, the smaller the better, so it will be easy to hide and escape notice. We'll save half of our daily ration of margarine over the next 2 weeks for oil. We can make wicks from the loose threads at the edges of our coats. When everyone's asleep, we'll light our menorah under my bunk." "Certainly not," cried Nachman Roseman. "It's Hanukkah, Reb Osher, the festival of miracles. We'll do the mitzvah the way it should be done, not in some rusty can fished out from the garbage, but with a proper menorah, real oil, at the proper time and place. I have a few rubles hidden away that I can pay Igor with at the metalworking shed. I also have a few debts I can call in at the kitchen." A few days before Hanukkah, Nachman triumphantly showed Reb Osher the menorah he had procured, a somewhat crude vessel, but unmistakably a real menorah, with 8 oil cups in a row and a raised cup for the shamus. On the first evening of Hanukkah, he set the menorah on a stool in the doorway between the main room of their barracks and the small storage area at its rear, and filled the right-hand cup. Together, the two Jews recited the blessings and kindled the first light, as millions of their fellows did that night in their homes around the world. On that first night, the lighting went off without a hitch, as it did on the second, third, and fourth nights of the festival. As a rule, the prisoners in the camp did not inform on each other, and their barrack mates had already grown accustomed to the religious practices of the two Jews. On the fifth night of Hanukkah, just as Reb Osher and Nachman had lit 5 flames in their menorah, a sudden hush spread through the barracks. The prisoners all froze in their places and turned their eyes to the doorway, in which stood an officer from the camp's high command. Though surprise inspections such as these were quite routine occurrences, they always struck terror in the hearts of their prisoners. The officer would advance through the barracks, meting out severe penalties for offenses such as a hidden cigarette or a hoarded crust of bread. "Quick, throw it out in the snow," whispered the prisoners. But the officer was already striding toward the back doorway, where the two Jews stood huddled over the still-burning flames of their candelabra. For a very long moment, the officer gazed at the menorah. Then he turned to Reb Osher. Piyat? Five, he asked. Piyat, replied the chassid. The officer turned and exited without a word. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a very happy and meaningful Chanukah.
Hello, this is Dr. James Weiner, director of the Weiner Wellness Center Greentree, inviting you to get well naturally. If conventional drugs and surgery have not eliminated your health complaints, it's time to try safe, natural approaches such as nutrition, muscle therapy, and chiropractic. We've helped tens of thousands regain their health, overcoming irritable bowel, colitis, Crohn's disease, acid reflux, carpal tunnel, chronic fatigue, psoriasis, mood swings, arthritis, headaches, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, underactive and overactive thyroid, and many other conditions. Take advantage of my 41 years of experience and my team of highly effective health professionals to help you to achieve better quality of health. Call us at the Weiner Wellness Center in Greentree, just minutes from downtown Pittsburgh, just off the parkway, at 412-922-WELL. 412-922-WELL. 412-922-9355 to get well naturally with the dedicated staff of the Weiner Wellness Center.
And so we come to the end of our Hanukkah special. We're taking you out with Nigun HaKafos because the HaKafos are the dancing and the Simcha that's going to come when Mashiach comes, when we merit the final redemption. Should it happen immediately? That's up to us and it's up to Hashem. We've done everything that we can do. It's now up to Hashem to bring Mashiach now. I'd also like to thank John James, station manager of WEDO, and Jeremy Bossy, the station's operations manager, and Dr. James Weiner for making this special program possible. Thanks also to Shmuel Sackett, Rabbi Jacobson, Rabbi Goldwasser, and Moshe Bakar tickling the keys, Devorah Delin for taking time out of their busy schedules just to bring this program to your home this Hanukkah. May this Hanukkah be the very last we spend in Gullis in exile, and may we merit to be all in Yerushalayim with the imminent arrival of a righteous Mashiach, watching the Kohen Gadol light the grand menorah in the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, the third, final, and eternal temple. I'm Hirsch DeLin wishing everyone a Freilichen, Lichtigen, Simcha Dikah, happy Hanukkah. As a famous friend always reminded us, we'll see you at the main gate. Shalom, shalom.